Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everybody. This is Shisada Akona Kamada. I'm so happy to have you all with us tonight for Satsang. Thank you so much for joining us and our core council members, Pieli and Megan, Tim and Linda. We've got some stuff to cover this evening, as always, so we're going to go ahead and get started. Take a nice deep breath, get yourself centered, and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, and the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles, not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zakiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a pure shaft of Christ light to surround each one of us and to go down to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Come on back to me. I'm so thrilled to be with you tonight. And I'm going to, at the risk of embarrassing someone, I'm going to anyway. Pete, I felt you so very strongly when I signed in. And thank you so much for being on the other end. My love to you. I had to make just a quick announcement just because I want to give our listeners kind of a heads up of one thing that's going on with us as an organization. We are in the middle of having to change our name. And this is something that is definitely going to happen. There's an organization that has a trademark over the word Shambhala, of all things, and as if they can own the meaning of that word. Anyway, we've been asked to cease and desist from using the Shambhala Center for Spiritual Awareness, and we don't yet know what we're going to rename ourselves. So we may, just to give you a heads up, we may just turn this program into Satsang with Shisada, because that's safe enough, and apparently I don't think anyone else out there has my name trademarked, so we can use that. Maybe I should trademark it, do you think? I probably should. So someone else out there doesn't trademark my name and then, you know, sue me for using it. I just love the world. It's just so fun. So fun to do the work. And I don't want to get specific on the organization because it's not about blasting them, but it's such an interesting thing to walk through because it's an organization that's all about kind of, you know, walking the middle path. And at the same time, they're functioning from this level of control. And of course, which comes out of fear that I find laughable, you know, if we're all here to do this work and we're all here to walk people into greater levels of consciousness and awareness, then shouldn't we practice what we preach? And that's all I'm going to say about that. So if you happen to see that on Thursday nights and Wednesday nights, there's a satsang with Shasada or satsang with something else, it will be me. And it will still be us, and Shambhala is going to always be who we are at our core. Shambhala meaning where the will of God is known, and that is at the heart of each and every one of you. Shambhala is a state of consciousness, yeah, not a something that's attached to a specific religion. So anyway, just to give you a little update there, and when we change our website address, then we will certainly let you know that as well. And so that's all kind of unfolding as we speak.
Maybe they can all stay tuned on Facebook.
I can't hear you. You got to put your mic down.
Sorry, I always forget to do that. Maybe we can have everybody stay tuned on Facebook since we still have that up.
That is true. Yeah, for now, until we get in trouble for doing it, the Facebook page will stay the same. And yeah, so tune in there as well. And our BBS page won't change, and you know, when it does change, our name will change there too. So it's all good. Okay, lots to talk about. I don't know where to start. We had a really full session here in Charlotte, and it was great because we had some people that aren't like regulars, and it's always so fun to talk with fresh blood in the room. So what are we going to talk about tonight? We did talk about one thing, which I thought was kind of interesting. I had no intentions on talking about it until it popped up. And what happened was I was asking people, if I asked you, are you a seeker or are you a devotee or devotee, however you say it, you know, how would you label yourself? And it was interesting to go around the room and see who said what, and then the understanding of kind of what it means. So I'll talk about that just a little bit tonight from the level of what it takes to do the work. Now, of course, you wouldn't listen to BBS if you were just, you know, your average unconscious human. So something inside of you has already been sparked to return home, or you wouldn't even be here. That being said, even within the community as awakened as BBS, there are different levels of consciousness that are floating around here. And so those who would end up on a program such as mine will be pretty unique. And those of you who know me know that I'm really not here to go around making everybody feel good. And I'm not like a, what am I not? What's the work not? It's not about allowing you to remain in your safe and secure levels of denial and repression just to make you feel good about sitting in denial and repression. So the work that we do here is all about bringing everything to the surface. So you don't come to me if you want someone to make you feel good. You don't come to me because you want a mother figure who's going to coddle you. I'm not that. Not that I can't be that, because I can, but I am not that. I'm here to show you any place where you are still attached and stuck, places that you can't see. And a lot of times that doesn't feel good for the one that I'm working with, because of course, you know, if on a conscious level, we'll say it this way. On an unconscious level, if you wanted to see it, you would have already seen it on a conscious level, understand? And the unconscious is extremely adept at hiding the things that it does not want you to see or to recognize. So a lot of what we do is, you know, it doesn't look pretty on the outside. The flip side of it is, you know, amazing. But when you walk through it, it's not always easy. So that being said, I'm going to talk to you as if you're my student. Okay. I don't know where you're coming from. I don't know if you've been listening to me for the last year. I don't know if you've never heard me before, but I'm going to treat you all the same tonight. And that is to talk to you from the space that you are truly a seeker from the depths of your being, right? And what is it to be a seeker versus being a devotee of God? So the seeker is an incredibly necessary thing to be from the space of this. Until that will of God that is within everyone kind of comes forward from the space of desiring truth, there really is no seeker. Okay? The humans on the planet, by and large, are happy just to be humans on a planet. You know, just kind of eking out a living, just having their families, being in the world, not thinking much about who they are, where they came from, what their purpose is. You know, a lot of people don't even ask those questions. If you function from the level of the seeker, you have been asking those questions, and that's what brings you to doing, you know, any kind of spiritual work, is that you're already seeking truth. Now, the difference is kind of the beginning level seeker is seeking truth that makes them feel good versus a hardcore seeker who seeks truth for the sake of truth, right? Regardless of how it feels. And it's necessary to walk the path of the seeker who really functions from a very mental place. The seeker wants answers. The seeker has learned to ask the questions and is comfortable asking the questions, even the uncomfortable questions. And what they desire is the truth to those questions, an answer, not to placate them, but just to, you know, get the no holds barred truth. It's beautiful. But there's something about the word seeker that's a little polarizing, isn't it? Because in order to seek, it means that there is some end result of the seeking. And of course, we can say, well, you know, if you're a spiritual seeker, the end result is, what do we want to call it? We want to call it awakening or illumination or enlightenment or ascension, whatever you want to call it, God realization, self-actualization. We could have all kinds of names for it. Is that true? Well, yeah, that's true. But beyond it, it still holds something in place. And there's a disconnect that happens when we identify too strongly with being a seeker. Because the seeker, really, the way it's kind of created in the construct of mind, the seeker really never does reach its end goal, does it? It's always going to be seeking. Now, for as much as it sets it up so that there is an end goal and that the seeker stops seeking, the funny thing about the mind is that the mind will create it so that it's always seeking. Why? Because the mind can't not be the seeker once it is the seeker. It has to identify with something, right? The one that's being sought already is. The one that's being sought never wasn't. And the one that's being sought can't be found by the seeker. Gosh, I hope that makes sense to you. The one that's being sought can't be found by the seeker. Sounds like a riddle, doesn't it? Kind of is. Why? Because the seeker is identified consciousness. That which is sought is non-identified consciousness. And one does not merge with the next, see? Identified consciousness needs to remain identified. So what the seeker seeks can't be attained from the level of the seeker. You see? So there is no actual attainment, because the one who actualizes it is it. You see, they didn't go from that to this. They always were this. They never lost that. If I say you are God, you didn't stop being God because you became an identified person in human form. God is still present, even though you don't see it, even though you don't recognize it. It doesn't mean it's not there. It is there. But when you attain a space where you know yourself to be God, the I there disappears. You see? So you don't become it. You can't become what you already are. You understand? You can't become what you already are. So there's this thing that's happening in the collective mind of the seeker that says, I was that, now I'm this, and I have to be that again. And that's wrong. That's not accurate. You were that. You still are that. You always will be that. End of story. Yeah? End of story. For a time, there's this thing going on where you don't think that that's accurate, and you don't identify with it. You aren't it in your own consciousness. But it doesn't mean it's not true. So that's the quandary of the seeker. At some point at the level of seeker, you reach this, you know, feels like the edge of a cliff, kind of like what's next, you know. There's a moment where it's recognized that even the identification with the seeker will keep one from actualizing the self. Capital S, self. So even to be identified there won't serve you. But it's necessary while it's necessary. The devotee is a little different, because the devotee yearns for truth, but it takes a slightly different route. It's more of a bhakti route. It's the root of the heart. The devotee having utter, complete devotion for God. And within that, it holds it as separate as well, like the seeker does, because in the beginning, the devotee sees God as outside of itself. God, something out here, some form I could worship, some concept that I might have, whether it's Krishna or Christ or Maitreya or Muhammad, like whatever we want to, anything, it wouldn't matter. Buddha, it's still something out there, yeah. And it goes about it from the space of utter devotion. And it seems that there's this level of willingness for the devotee to just kind of like just rip it all from me. Like the only thing that matters is my closeness to you, God, my union with God, nothing else matters. It's a little harder for the seeker, who's more mental, more of a jnana yoga space, to be in that space, because the intellect is strong and they will justify why they shouldn't go that far. Where the one who lives in bhakti can, if all they see is the Lord and that is it, nothing else matters. That's a level that's necessary for everyone. If you truly want, desire self-actualization, if you truly desire ascension, leaving the life-death cycle, leaving third density reality altogether, if that is what your will is driving you toward, and there's a fire in your belly to do it, then you must reach that space of, it doesn't matter what it takes. and the space to be willing to walk where you're being guided to walk, regardless of what it looks like. And regardless of what that might mean for you in your personal life. That's the scariest part. You know, in the beginning, it's not scary. I mean, it's, I say that, the ego finds all of it scary. But in the beginning, you know, when people come into dissolution work because they have hit, you know, a real low, it doesn't feel so scary because they want an end to their pain, right? And they may be very willing to confront fears and issues that have been laying dormant for a long time just because they just desire this sense of peace. And it happens. It's beautiful. And that's where the real work begins. You know, when you find peace, when you can live in equanimity, when you can live in a space of non-attachment and non-judgment, that's not your end goal. And now your real work begins. Because now you've thrown off the stuff that was really ripened and ready for you to release. And now it's time for you to dig for the rest of it. And that's where the true devotee of God is a little better prepared. You see, if your single point of focus in your world is the divine, it becomes easier to do the things that are really hard to do than if your point of focus is the world. And we talked earlier it was Abraham? Abraham. So in the Bible, you know, with Abraham and his son and the whole God telling him that he had to take the life of his son for God. Of course, you know, we read that and there's all kinds of versions of what people think that means and all. You know, and metaphorically, there's truth to it. Because it's not, you have to pull back from the personal story of a man and his son and blah, blah, blah. What you're looking at is your concept of worldly attachment. And no one actualizes from a space of attachment to the world. And it could be anything in the world. The use of a father and his son is very strong because people can identify with that. Everybody can from one of those two levels. Everyone's been someone's child, right? Even if you aren't a parent, you've been someone's child. So you have an understanding of the bond between a parent and a child that is very deep. But it's true of just the attachment to the world. You know, so you say you're a seeker, and I speak to all of you. You say you're a seeker. How far are you willing to go? How far are you willing to go? If you found your guru and you pledged your devotion to whatever their system is, how far would you be willing to go? Would you lay it all down to walk a path that would lead you to truth? Or do you want to pick and choose your way to ascension? And if that's what you want, you will be sorely disappointed because it doesn't work like that. What do you not want to lay down in your life? If I said to you, you have to let go of X, what would that X be for you where you would say, no, that's the line, I'm not willing to do that. I'll do everything else you ask me, but I'm not going to do that. And if you have one of those, or if you have several of those, or if you have 40 of those, you have to look at each one and really go into why the attachment is there. What's the attachment? What is the attachment? And I've told the story before, and I'll tell it again, because it's just a beautiful one. Just to show that there are seekers out there. When I say a devotee, I'm not kidding. This is what I mean. A guru who had those who wanted to work with him so badly that they did lay it all down for him. And his method, which is terribly effective, his method was to take someone who wanted to work with him and to give them a piece of paper, and the piece of paper had a date and it had a location. And he would give it to them and he would say, here you go, on this date, be there. And they didn't know where they were going and they didn't know when they were going. And their job was to show up, and they literally had to start a new life wherever it was he told them to go. They had to take on new names. They had to take on a job they hadn't done before. Any identity that they had got left behind, meaning making new friends where they were. They weren't talking about their families and their kids and what they do for a living. None of it existed anymore. They were fresh. And they had to do that, I think it was like every 6 months, up and move. New person, new job, new home. And these were, I mean, there were women who left their children, small children, to do this. Because the only thing that mattered to them was illumination. And they didn't care what it took to get it. They'd do it. That's a devotee. That's hardcore. Now, to my knowledge, I don't think there's anyone out there doing that type of work now. But it's a good spot to sit and look at and go, would I be willing to do that? You know? I say that the only thing that matters to me is God. I say that the only thing that matters to me is enlightenment. But when push comes to shove, do I really mean it? Do I really mean it? And I guess that's a quick way to find out, isn't it? Really? Because the mind will always come up with justification for why I shouldn't do that. Well, of course not. The mind always has an agenda, doesn't it? And it's filled with concept. Concept of, if I left my children, I'd be a bad mother. If I left my children, I would, you know, do them irreparable damage. Emotional damage, you know, deserting my children. Like, you know, and you can see how strong that would be and how hard it would be to overcome that fear and to walk away. But that's the level that's necessary. Now, the thing that I was saying to everyone is that it's not necessary to do it in the physical world when you're willing to do it internally. Because remember, the physical world is only a reflection of the unconscious that sits within. The inner world and the outer world are the same. So if you're willing to go within first and really start digging, you know, ask yourself the question, if, you know, if Shisada asked me tomorrow to quit my job, not asked me, told me to quit my job, would I do it? And look at what comes, you know? If the answer is, well, it would depend on blah, 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 or if the answer is, of course not. Are you crazy? Or if the answer is, well, does she have another job for me to go to? See, there's all these things, and they're all worthy of your attention. You got to look. This is what the, you know, if you're serious, you're devoted to awakening, you know, this is the stuff you've got to be doing on your own. Not waiting for the world to force you into doing it because you just lost your job. Being proactive and looking, asking the question, you know, probing deeper. What's sitting in there? What if? What if I up and left my wife? What if, you know, someone showed me that there was this aspect of a relationship between me and my wife and it wasn't healthy? What if I got real about that rather than being in denial over it? What if I actually got real about it and recognized that I've been enabling this whole mess rather than being part of a solution? And what if the solution means we need to be apart? Ooh, I don't know. But I love her. You love her. And what does that mean? You love her enough to do what's right for her? Or do you love her in the way that means you want to hold on to her, regardless of if it's best for her? See? That's where most people sit. I love you, and that means that I want to own you, or it means I, you know, I have to keep you close. What if what's best for the other person is for them not to be with you at all? You still love them? Can you love them enough to walk away? What if that was the best thing for them? What if in their journey, that was something that would catapult them forward spiritually because they'd never do it on their own? What if you could look at it and you knew they'd never do it on their own if it was up to them? Even if they saw it, they still wouldn't do it on their own. Could you love them enough to do it for them? Even though it would pain you to do it, because from a personal place, you love them that much. See, this is a tough question. What if it was your child? What if you were witnessing your child functioning from a level that just was not healthy, and you recognized your part in it, knowing how painful it would be for that child when you decided to step forward and function from a clear place, taking right action, knowing that they might hate you for it? What's love from this place? Taking right action or fostering incorrect behavior? You see, the very foundations of what you believe to be true are questioned in this work. I'm not here to talk to you about, you know, what's going on with aliens, and I'm not here to talk to you about all the love and light stuff, about channeled messages and all of the new age stuff that clutters your mind. I am here to challenge your beliefs, to challenge your attachments, because they are tethers to this world. And what you can't see is what sits on the other side of those tethers. And unfortunately, you don't start getting a glimpse of that until you start doing this level of work, where hard choices are made. Where action is taken that can bring you to your knees in pain, but you know it's the right thing to do. I have been there. I'm not speaking from someone else's experience. I am speaking from my own. I know what it is to have to make the right choice and to have it kill me. from a personal place. And making that choice anyway, in spite of the pain. And sometimes that's what it takes. You're here to master this world. You know, you're already masters in how not to function in the world. Right? Just by virtue of identifying with the program. Now it's time to master the world from a conscious place where you see the bigger picture, where love is all that matters to you, but not human love, divine love in all of its forms. That's what you're here to do. You know, if you really understood, and not even understood, if you had the experience of everyone you ever loved being inside of you so that you could tune into them and they would be fully present for you, do you think that you would experience attachment the way you do in the world? And this is part of the work, because that's where everyone lives anyway, is in your heart. Your heart is God. Everything exists within God. Therefore, it all exists within you. And we get attached to a form, and we get attached to a name, and we get attached to a voice, or to skin, or to a personality. And then we completely lose sight of where they really are. Because that person that you think you love, by and large, isn't real anyway. That form isn't them. You are formless. That personality isn't them. It's a program. So who'd you really fall in love with? Who do you really love? Well, if you can actually see into it and see that you love the essence that's behind all of it, then does it matter if there's a form in front of you or not? Where does the essence live? It lives within you. You see, you can stand with someone and that person can be exhibiting some kind of atrocious behavior and you can love them in the middle of that moment. Is it something that they're exuding from that body? Of course not. You love them because of their essence. Well, where is that? Where is it? It's in you. Do you see? It's very simple if you break it down like that. You really love somebody and they're having some kind of, you know, thing going on with them and they're melting down, and so the personality is spewing out all kinds of garbage and throwing things around a room or whatever. If you don't see them as personality and you see them as the God that they are, the one that you're in love with is in your heart. It's not, has nothing to do with what you're seeing in form across the room. So this whole sense of I have to have you near me to experience you is a bunch of junk. There's a beautiful line at the end of one of my favorite books called Initiation. If those of you haven't listened to me before, have ever heard me speak it, it's one of the few books that I actually recommend reading. And in Initiation, she says at the end of the book that when, and I'm going to paraphrase, but basically she's saying when I kind of want to be with those I love, she says, I turn the spotlight of my consciousness inward. and find them there. That's exactly what she's talking about. It has nothing to do with someone being in form with you here. You're omnipresent. You are not stuck in a body. All it takes is, as she said in the book, turning your consciousness inward. You find the ones you love inside of you. God is singular. So why would you ever have to look outside of yourself for anything if you're divine right here? And people are, you know, people get stuck with that with their children. They're away and I miss my children so much. Or you're away from a partner and, oh, I can't function if I'm not near my beloved. Or you have a guru that is, you know, an ocean away from you. And, oh, you know, nothing's the same until I get back over to his ashram and can be in his presence. It's all fiction. It's because you haven't learned to find them. And it's not even learning. You haven't remembered where they live. You have a story that you're telling yourself about where people exist. The space-time thing has you all, you know, upside down and inside out. Alive or dead, doesn't matter. They exist in your heart. The real them exists in your heart, always, always. There's never a reason to miss anybody. If they exist in your heart, where can they go? Where can they go? I said that to my guide once. She was wherever she was. And I said, I think I texted her or something. I miss you. And she said, silly butt. I'm with you. Well, yeah. Duh. Wasn't my experience then. But now, yeah. Can it be joyful and beautiful to physically be with those you love? Well, of course. Of course. But it's not separate, a separate experience from just experiencing them within, you see? Yes, in the world, it's true. To touch someone is a beautiful thing, and to hear a voice is a beautiful thing, right? But it doesn't mean that when you don't have that, that they aren't with you. So these are things worth really contemplating and seeing where you sit with all of it. Seeing where you sit with all of it. Could you let someone go if that's what was necessary? And if you let them go, what would you be losing? See? If they exist in you anyway, what would you be losing? And really, you wouldn't lose anything. The thing is that this level of work forces you to see all of it from a very different lens. And the mind argues with that lens because it says, no, that doesn't make sense because there is death, right? I've seen it. I had someone taken from me. I can't be with him anymore. And the mind finds it very easy to justify all of it because when you look to the world, you seem to have proof that it's true. But it's not true. Because the fact of the matter is, regardless of what happens to a physical form, your awareness does not change just because a body drops. It's not like you disappear. You will always be with you. Always, 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 always. Because there was no beginning and there will never be an end. There's no break in consciousness. And that has to become your experience. You want off the life-death cycle? That has to become your experience. No fear of death. Are you kidding me? What's to fear? What is it that you're afraid of? Afraid of pain? Maybe. Yeah. In form, pain isn't a terribly pleasant experience. Yeah. One thing that I always loved to look at, I mean, from the time I was a kid, because I was kind of not your average child, but I used to contemplate people who would die in some kind of horrendous accidents, you know. And I used to wonder to myself, you know, like we all look at it and say, how terrible. Oh my gosh, you know, what he must have gone through or the suffering or whatever. And I always wondered, what if at that moment of impact, a moment of whatever, what if the soul was just kind of lifted out? And what if that being never even experienced that thing that we're saying was so horrible? And you know, it's worth looking at, because how do you know? For as much fear as you have about being, you know, in some kind of horrendous accident or something that would take your life and you'd have to go through some terrible experience, how do you know that that would even happen? How do you know that you wouldn't be just lifted out of that body before any of it happened at all? You don't know that. And yet the fear, the projection of pain, the projection of suffering, of all of it, sits there, and it kind of is immobilizing, you know, gets you stuck in this place of feeling like, oh my God, like I have to control my life in such a way that that could never happen to me because I'm so terrified about what that would mean. Like, you know, Megan was saying to me before, having a thought of being in an airplane and having that thing flash in front of her eyes where she sees the plane going down, crash. And of course, the story of the personality doesn't want that to happen, and it's fearful of what it would be like, and it projects out all of this stuff. But the bottom line is, when that personality isn't there anymore, it would just be observed. Oh, plane's going down. Oh, this must be it. Transition time. I mean, literally that simple. Transition time. Okay. Work is done, because that's the reality of it. When your time is up, your time is up. It doesn't matter what the personality wants or doesn't want. The personality has nothing to do and no say-so in when your work here is done. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. When the work is done, it doesn't matter where you are. It's time to exit, right? All right. So I gave you a lot to look at tonight. Start looking at these questions. There's one thing that is always true. If you don't do the work within, you will have to do the work because you'll be forced to from the outside. So if you are a seeker, you hold yourself to be a devotee of the Lord. I'm urging you now, ask the hard questions. Do the hard work. Take the time to look within. Struggle through it all. It's so worth it. You've been living in the dark. You will walk into the light, and it'll all fade away like a bad dream. And that being said, we're going to go into our meditation for tonight. The words are fantastic to this one. So enjoy it, and we will be with you next Thursday. So much love to you all. Good night.
Why be afraid if I'm not alone? Life is never easy, rest is unknown.
You are divine.